Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to Browns Ridge Church Online. We hope you've had an incredible week celebrating Christmas with your friends and family. I'm not sure if you've taken your decorations down, but we have not taken ours down yet. So the fun is still in the air. But as we wrap up this year, we wanted to revisit a message from just a couple months ago that we think is really, really important to our church. I did a series called Open Invitation, talking about the power of an invitation. And we think a brand new year is the perfect time to invite someone to check out church for the first time. So check out this message and be thinking about who you can invite to come sit with you in 2025. So have you ever gotten an invitation and at first you felt really good about it, but you only later to realize that you weren't the first choice of that person, you weren't the first invitation, you were like second or third or fourth or maybe fifth down the list. It's like you got the invitation, it was like, oh, how kind, they thought of us, that's so kind. And then later you realize, oh, they didn't think of us first, they thought of some other people before us, and then later we got the invitation. It can be a little bit of an awkward thing, but we've all been on both sides of that, haven't we? We've been the receiver of that invitation, and we've also been the giver of that invitation. I want to tell you about a time where I was kind of the second invitation for someone, but it ended up being great for me in life. Have to go back to the 20th century for this one. The year was 1996. Yeah. I was a freshman in high school. And one of my very best friends came to me and said, hey, will you come with me to this Wednesday night gathering of high school students at this local church in our community? And I said yes. And again, it ended up being a really, really good thing. But I didn't understand the full context of the invitation originally. But I learned over the course of several weeks what had really gone on. My close friend was dating a girl who went to this church. And he was attending the Wednesday night services with her. And apparently at some point, things didn't work out between them, so they broke up. And he was thinking to himself, well, that's unfortunate about her, but I really like these services on Wednesday night. I want to keep going. And he didn't want to be like the creepy weirdo that kept showing up to the youth group, single, being the ex-boyfriend of the girl. So he needed a wingman. And that's how I got the invitation. And interestingly enough, it ended up being a game changer in my life. And it's a great example that a simple invitation can change a life. Even an imperfect invitation can change a life. You think about it, there's in every area of life, you can probably think back to your story where you've been impacted by an invitation. It was an invitation to a gathering or to an event. And something instrumental in your life happened at that event and changed the course of who you would become in life. Maybe you showed up and you met someone that later became your business partner, or you met someone, started a relationship or a friendship, and you're friends to this day, and you look back to, man, I'm so glad that I went to that event. I'm so glad that so-and-so invited me to that event. Maybe the invitation came in the form of a college acceptance letter. An institution said, hey, we are inviting you to come study at our school. You've been accepted. Here's your invitation. You go to that college, that university, and again, the rest is history. It changed the course of your life. Maybe it was a job offer. A company invited you to come work for them. Hey, here's your official offer, your official invitation, and that changed the course of your life. Maybe it was an invitation to a date, and that led to other dates, and that led to an engagement and a marriage. And you think back, and in many of the life-changing moments that we have in life, they start with an invitation. And this is especially true for followers of Jesus in the room. You think back, that invitation was really a starting point for your faith. That invitation was the catalyst or the launch to your faith journey. Someone invited you to church, or someone invited you to a small group. Or you think back in your story, and it was back in college, someone invited you to that Bible study back in college, or someone just invited you to a cup of coffee, and for you, you weren't really sure what you thought about faith and religion, but you knew this person was kind of into the whole thing, and you trusted them, you liked them, and you went to coffee, and you started a conversation, and the way they talked about things, the way they asked questions, it sparked a curiosity in you. And you started asking more questions and more questions. And then you ended up taking that step to come to church for the very first time. And it ended up changing your life forever. In your faith journey, you look back on it and you go, wow, I'm so grateful for that invitation. For me in 1996, I get invited to these Wednesday night church services. And for me, it was the first time I'd ever seen contemporary music. That's what we called it back then. Now we just call it music. But back 30 years ago, I'm gonna give you a little church history lesson. There was traditional music, which was organs and choirs. And then people started doing this new thing called contemporary music, which is what you heard earlier today. Drums, electric guitars, acoustic guitars. And for me, it was the first time that I could relate to the music that I was hearing in church. And then the person who would speak every week would get up and he'd give this message that was just practical. It was like, here's what faith looks like with feet on. Here's how you live out your faith. Here's what a Monday morning faith looks like. It was practical teaching. And for me, my faith began to take off. I began to see that faith was not just about Sunday mornings and God was not just concerned with Sunday mornings, but that every morning that I woke up, God was with me. And every area of my life could be lived with him and for him. And I could follow him every day of the week, not just Sunday morning. For me, this, when people ask about my story, where they say, hey, how did you become a pastor? Or how did you get into the whole church thing? Or when did your faith journey begin? Anytime someone asks a question like that, I go back to that invitation from my best friend in 1996. That was the thing that started my faith journey. And in so many ways, it's the reason why I'm here today. And many of us in the room, many of us have an invitation like that. We can look back in our stories and see that moment when someone extended an invite to us. And it was the turning point in our faith. It was the turning point. And we are so thankful for that invitation. When we think back on it, when we tell the story, when we share about that person that invited us to the Bible study, to the church, to that conversation. We don't have words to express how grateful we are for it. And if we have benefited from that invitation, if we are grateful for that invitation, if our life has been changed from someone else's invitation, well, that leads us to a question. And it's a question that I wanna wrestle with and focus on over the next 3 weeks in this series. And this is the question right here. Are we inviting? Are we offering to others the very thing that we have benefited from? The thing that we wouldn't trade anything in the world for? And from the outside looking in, it's a no-brainer. If a third party was sitting here, they would think, well, no, yeah, looking at the situation, it's like, this is definitely something they should do. And we even kind of feel that too. We're like, yeah, like when you think about it, it makes it's common sense. It's like, yeah, if we've benefited from that, if we're grateful for the invitation we received, shouldn't we be offering invitations to others? Yet we don't always do it, do we? We hesitate. We resist. There's something that kind of rises up in us a little bit that kind of puts up some walls and gets defensive. And in fact, even for some of you right now, you are feeling uncomfortable because I brought up the idea of you inviting someone else or bringing up faith with another person and your palms are like already sweating. You're like, uh-oh, like where's this going today? And I would just say, if that's you today, you can relax, you can rest easy because most of us struggle on some level with talking to other people about church or faith or inviting other people, even me, and I'm a professional Christian, okay? So you can sit back and relax today. I think we have a tendency to overcomplicate it and to overthink it. And I was trying to think through what are the specific reasons that we resist inviting other people? And I came up with a couple, and there's probably more, and this list is not scientific, but here's a few reasons of why we don't invite. The first one is this. We don't want it to get weird. Can anybody resonate with that in here today? I know I can because I deal with this on a regular basis because of my job. You know, when people find out I'm a pastor, it gets a little weird. You know, they stop making eye contact. They hide their beer. You know? And I'm like, no, man, you don't have to do that. You know, it's like, and I show up and I kill the party. That's what I do. Everybody's having a great time. And then I walk in and they find out I'm a pastor and it's all over. It's like, watch your language. Don't tell any colorful jokes. Hide your beer. The pastor's here. Okay. So I get it. And I can't stand that. I don't want it to get weird. That's why, like, sometimes people ask, they'll be like, what do you do? I'm like, I lead a nonprofit in the community, like, try to be, like, real vague about it. Oh, well, really? Which one? Well, it's a church. I'm a pastor. Oh, okay. I got to take this phone call. I got to, you know. So I get it. It can get weird, right? But that's one of the things that can make us resist or hesitate bringing this up and making an invite. Here's another reason right here. We don't have all the answers. We're all on a journey when it comes to faith. Many of us in the room may be still figuring this out. We may be skeptical. We may think to ourselves, gosh, I don't know if I have everything figured out in faith. Can I really invite someone else? I mean, I still have my own doubts about certain parts of this. And, you know, I don't know if I feel qualified. I don't know if I'm far enough along in the faith journey to invite someone else. So we resist it. Another thing that can cause us to resist is just our own apathy or inconvenience. And I don't mean apathy in kind of like a judgmental way of like, oh, you just don't care. It's just, I think what happens is we get so focused on what's going on in our own world. We have enough going on in our life and we just kind of keep our head down. And it's like, I'm just going to handle all of this right now. And I'm just kind of not going to worry about what's going on in other people's life. Or we kind of see it as inconvenient. It's like, it's inconvenient. Or I'm in my comfort zone. We don't say we're in our comfort zone, but essentially it's like, we don't want to get out of our comfort zone. We don't want to rock the boat. So we hesitate. We resist. And then this last one, people's view of the church. We're not sure what people's view of the church is. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this next week, but there's all sorts of stories that come on the news. There's documentaries, there's podcasts. And we see all that and we're going, oh goodness, I don't know if my neighbor is watching the news or listening to that documentary, but I don't want to be lumped in with those folks. So we don't know what their view is. We don't know what the reputation of the church is with them. And so we just hesitate. And again, these are just a few of the things that can cause us to not invite. But here's the thing. The people who invited us, the people who invited you, that invitation you look back to in your faith journey and you're so thankful for it, the invitation I look back to, so grateful for it, the people who invited us had the same hesitations. They had the same reservations. They had the same walls that would potentially come up. And we are so glad that they overcame them, aren't we? We're so glad that they pushed through. And so over these next couple of weeks, I'm going to challenge us to get out of our comfort zone like someone has already gotten out of their comfort zone for us. We're going to talk about how to not overcomplicate it and to not overthink it. We're going to simplify it. And we're going to make it as easy and as simple as it should be. Today, we're going to look at an example from the New Testament. And this is a great example of an invitation that changed someone's life forever. Even though it happened in the first century, it's a great model for us in the 21st century, specifically for the type of church that we have. And the story involves a few of Jesus's disciples, Nathaniel and Philip. And Jesus is a part of it as well. And I'm actually going to start at the end of this story. I want to kind of give you the ending, the punchline, and then we're going to rewind a little bit to see what we can take away from the story. But basically, Nathaniel meets Jesus and has this interaction with Jesus. And then John chapter 1, verse 49, Nathaniel says this. It says that Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. This is Nathanael's conversion moment. This is when the light bulb goes on for him. This was the moment for him where he would look back and he would say, I will never be the same after that. And many of us in this room, we've experienced this. And this is what we want for others. We want everyone in our community to have a life-changing encounter with Jesus. And this is that moment for Nathanael. Now, let's roll back a few verses to see what led to it. Again, this is a great model for us today. We're gonna go back to verse 43. And Jesus had just been baptized by John the Baptist, was starting his ministry. He just called a few folks. And then it says this, that the next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. And finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, these are two guys that Jesus had already called to follow him. Peter, like Andrew and Philip, was from the town of Bethsaida. So you've got Andrew and Peter and Philip. They're with Jesus. They've chosen to follow him. They're spending time with him. And we don't know all that is transpiring, but there was another guy from their hometown named Nathanael. And at some point in their conversations, they were like, "Hey, we need to tell Nathanael about this. We need to loop him on this." And Philip ends up leaving to go find Nathanael. In verse 45, it says that Philip found Nathanael. And he told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about. The one he wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote." We found the one. The one we've been waiting for, looking for. There's so much that is loaded in this comment for first century Israelites. This is a really, really big deal. They had been waiting on the coming Messiah, the coming King, the Son of God for 1,000+ years. And Philip found Nathanael and said, "Hey, he's here. We found him." And then he tells him who it is. And our Bibles don't necessarily read this the best way, but this is the way our Bibles read it. It says, "We found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And we can kind of read past that pretty quickly. But what Philip is telling Nathanael in this moment is, hey, we found the one we've been waiting for, the one Moses talked about, the one the prophets talked about. And I'm gonna tell you who he is. His name is Jesus, but there's a lot of Jesuses in that day and age. That was a common name in that culture. So specifically, he was the Jesus that's from Nazareth. And there was probably multiple Jesuses in Nazareth. So he said specifically in the town of Nazareth, he's the Jesus that is also the son of Joseph. So he gives all this context to Nathanael. And then Nathanael's response is surprising. It's a bit shocking. You would expect Nathanael to go, "What? We found the one? That's awesome news. That's great news. It's about time. We've been waiting 1,000 years. This was a really, really big deal for them. And so you would expect him to be elated. You would expect him to be excited. But instead, he gets hung up on one piece of information that Philip included in his description of the one whom Moses wrote about. He says this right here, "Nazareth?" And I added the question marks and exclamation points in yellow there, because that's really the emotion coming from Nathanael in this moment. And if they were texting about it today, if it was Philip and Nathanael texting back and forth, he probably would have included this emoji right here. So that's not in your Bibles. This is what's in your Bibles right here. Just that, just one exclamation point. But really the emotion in the moment necessitates more exclamation points, question marks, the shocked face. Because that's what Nathanael was feeling in the moment. He gets hung up on this one town, this one location, this one piece of information that Philip gave. Nazareth? Really? And then he says this. He says, "Can anything good come from there? Can anything good come from Nazareth?" And there's obviously some cultural context that we're missing here. There's moments throughout scripture that in that culture, there were things that were just understood. They didn't need to be defined. They go without being said. And it's the same way in our culture today. There's things that go without being said. There's things that we don't have to define or explain. And 1,000 years from now, if someone was reading documents or our journal entries, they may have some questions about stuff. I mean, if you were to be writing in your journal today and or documenting out your day, like, yeah, we went to church and then, you know, we went out to lunch and we went to Avalon or we went to Halcyon or we went to the Collection. You don't need to define that. We all know what you're talking about in here. Everybody in our culture, they understand that. It goes without being said. We know what those places are, but 1,000 years from now, they'd be like, what is the Avalon? What is the Halcyon? How do you even pronounce this? Collection? How do you pronounce that word, you know? There's cultural context that's needed that we're missing in this moment, but we can tell from the clues around it that there was something that wasn't great about Nazareth. It wasn't the greatest city or town or village in that area. In fact, people looked down on it and it was considered maybe not the best part of town. So Nathanael's hung up on that. Nathanael's hung up on the reputation of Nazareth. And so he's confused and he's questioning. He's skeptical. He's reluctant. He's hesitant. Not unlike people are today with us. When we have the opportunity to extend an invitation, they're wondering the same thing potentially. Can anything good come from there? Can anything good come from church? Can anything good come from following Jesus? Can anything good come from me getting my family involved at church? Can anything good come from a relationship with God? Many people around us have that same question kind of spinning in their mind whenever we bring up our faith, whenever we have the opportunity to invite. And this is why Philip's response is so huge for us today. Philip could have begun trying to convince Nathanael. He could have tried to explain to Nathanael from the Old Testament why Nazareth was the town and here's where the Messiah was supposed to come from. And so yes, Nazareth could be, you know, he could have gotten into all that. He could have just started an argument. He could have started a debate. Instead, look at what Philip does in response. In response to Nathanael's doubt, his reluctance, his hesitancy, his questioning, his disgust over the town of Nazareth, Philip just says this right here. Come and see. A simple invitation. Come and see. Hey, Nathanael, you come check him out for yourself. No explanation. No begging, no debating, no arguing. Just come and see. Philip knew what he would experience if he did. He had already been around Jesus. He knew how extraordinary he was. His mind was already made up. This is the Son of God. This is the King of Israel. This is the Savior of the world. So for Nathanael, it was just a simple invitation. Hey, just come and see. And that simple invitation changed Nathanael's life forever. Nathanael takes Philip up on the invitation and he goes and he meets Jesus and they're in this dialogue and Jesus says something that kind of triggered something for Nathanael. He's like, wait a second. Like, how do you know me? This is what he says in verse 48. He says, how do you know me? Nathanael asked. And Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you. Before Philip invited you, before Philip had that conversation with you where he said, come and see. This is so, so powerful. Don't miss this. We should assume that God is already at work in people's lives before we invite them. God is already at work in their life before we invite them. So our invitation is just a continuation of God's work in their lives. And that should take the pressure off for us, okay? It's not up to us to convert this person, to change this person, to, you know, be the the driving force in their life, of their faith. No, we should assume God's already at work in their lives. And our invitation is potentially just a continuation of God's work in their lives. And our invitation is our opportunity to be a part of what God is doing in their lives. Think about that. Philip got to be a crucial part. Philip got to be a crucial part of Nathanael's story through simply inviting him. Not explaining anything, not convincing of him anything, just saying, come and see. Come and see Nathanael. And Nathanael came and saw. And like millions and millions of people since then Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. He put his faith in Jesus, the thing that's most precious to many of us in the room, and the desire we have for everyone in our community. Nathanael's story, his journey, it started with doubt and questioning, like, really? Could there be anything good for me in this? And then a simple invite. Come and see. Changed his life forever. Nathanael's story is another example that a simple invitation can change a life. And again, for many of us in this room, that's our story. That's our faith story. We've experienced the good news of Jesus firsthand. We are convinced that Jesus is the Son of God. And we want others to experience him as well. Think about the people in your life, either that you know really well or that you're just kind of casual acquaintance with. Think about the people in your life who could benefit from the good news of Jesus. It could be friends, coworkers, somebody in your neighborhood. It could be family members. It could be the folks that you run into over and over again at your youth sports, that where you're dropping your kid off for practice or games. Think about the people that could benefit. And we want everyone in our community to experience a life-changing encounter with Jesus for their sake. Not even just for our church's sake. We want it for them because we think following Jesus is the best thing for them, and it's the best thing for our community, and ultimately it's the best thing for the world. So we're all surrounded by people every single week that could benefit from following Jesus. And for many of those people, for many of them, the only thing standing between them and a life-changing experience with Jesus is an invitation, a simple invitation. Maybe an imperfect invitation. And just to make this a little bit more personal for all of us in here, the only thing standing between them and a life-changing experience with Jesus is your invitation. Think about this. You are uniquely positioned in someone's life to offer that life-changing invitation. It's you. For someone, it's you. And so the question is not, do I know enough? Can I make a difference? Am I far enough along in my faith journey? You know, am I gonna say the right thing? That's not the question. The question that we all have to wrestle with is this one right here. Are you inviting? Are you inviting? Are you pushing through the hesitations that we all have and making the invite? You're pushing past not knowing enough, pushing past not being far enough along in your faith journey. Are you pushing past your own apathy or inconvenience? Because remember, we are so glad. We are so glad that someone did that for us. We're so glad that they pushed through those hesitations. So are you inviting? And more specifically, who needs an invite from you? Who in your life could use an invite? There may be somebody that comes to mind immediately. You may have already been thinking about it. As we've been talking about this over the last few minutes, you may think, oh, yep, I know my person already. It's her, it's him, got it. For some of us, it's gonna become obvious this week. You're gonna be going through life and all of a sudden, bing, you're gonna go, yep, that's the person. You're gonna cross paths with them at work or in the neighborhood or at the ball field and go, oh yeah, there's the person. There's the person that I could invite. So I want you to keep thinking about this. And if you call Brownsbridge home, I'm gonna give us a challenge today. All right, if this is your church, and even if you've just been coming for a few weeks or a few months, I wanna challenge us. We're all gonna do this together. Here's the challenge. Everyone invite someone. Everyone invite someone before the end of 2024. Now, I had to put the time frame on it because if I just say everyone invite someone, we'll kind of think to ourselves, oh, I'll get to that one day. You know, one day I'll be able to do that. So put a little bit of pressure on us on here before the end of 2024. So we got about 6 weeks, okay? But then as I was thinking through this, I thought, you know what? I think that's an average challenge. And I think we are an above average group. I don't know what you think. And if you're new around here, you're seated around some above average people. So I decided to upgrade our challenge, okay? I upgraded the challenge. Instead of everyone invite someone, it's gonna be everyone bring someone before the end of 2024. What that helps us do is not just drift into the, hey, have you heard about Brownsbridge? Yeah, you should check out my church sometime. And like, whoop, we'll walk away. We check the box. Hey, I invited someone. Pat on the back. I'm good to go, you know? We're all tempted to potentially do that. So I've upgraded the challenge. It's everyone bring someone before the end of 2024, which means we're gonna maybe have to make a second invitation and follow up and maybe remind them or maybe invite them to coffee first and just have a conversation with them. But here's the thing I want you to be confident of when you think about this challenge. We have designed our church to be as welcoming as possible to people who are not used to church. We say this all the time. You heard Heath talk about it earlier, that we want this place to feel like home. And for a lot of people that are on the outside looking in with faith, that the home is the last thing they think of when they think about going to church. And we have, from day one of this church, we have wanted to be a church that unchurched people love to attend. That's part of our DNA. It's our bread and butter. So you can be confident. When you bring someone here, they are gonna love their experience. We have created a come and see type of a church. All you need to do is make the invite. There's a couple different ways to say it. You can say what Philip said. You can say, hey, come and see. Hey, come with me. Come check it out. Come and see. You can get more specific. You can say, come sit with me. This is a really, really good one. Don't be vague. Don't be like, hey, you should check out my church sometime. Be specific. Hey, you should come sit with me. We go to the 9 a.m. service. You should come sit with me. We go to the 11 a.m. service. I'll meet you out at the coffee and we can grab a cup of coffee and then you can come sit with me. Or I'll meet you in the parking lot. I'll help you get your kids checked in. And then you can come sit with me. Come sit with me. And then if they have kids, this is probably the easiest invite of all, but you can just tell them, your kids will love it. You can confidently tell them your kids will love it. In fact, we joke around here all the time. It's like, hey, if you don't wanna come back, you better not bring your kids, because your kids are going to wake you up next Sunday morning and bring you back here every single week. But here's the thing, our kidmen is second to none. And there's not a parent in this community that doesn't wanna do good things for their kids. So when you bring up a value add to them as parents, and it's a really easy value add, all they need to do is show up and check their kids in. You tell them, hey, your kids are gonna love it. And even if they show up and they don't believe anything that we believe, if their kids have a good time and their kids are in the car going home and they're going, dad, we heard about this and we did this, blah, 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 you know, like, they may not believe anything we believe, they will be so glad they showed up. And they'll come back again and again. And then what happens in so many stories, God does his thing. And eventually that person puts their faith in Jesus. They have that Nathaniel type moment. So if they have kids, your kids love it. Here's the other thing. Just imagine for just a second if every kid in our community got to experience Upstreet every Sunday morning. Imagine if every middle schooler, every 6th, 7th, and 8th grader in this community was down in the attic in transit every single week, where they were learning to follow Jesus and they had an intentional adult that was tracking with them as a small group leader and investing in them, encouraging them, pouring into them. Y'all, that wouldn't just change our community. That would change our state. That would change our world. Imagine if every single middle schooler had that. That's what we can offer to people. But they need an invitation to do so.